Coming up on Patriots This Week, a superb effort, an unsatisfying end.
My mom thought it was a penalty.
Our moms are on the same page.
Does that count?
It doesn't count with the coach who has no time for last week's controversy.
We're on to Denver. Working on Denver.
Denver and Peyton Manning equals marquee matchup.
He's great at reading them defenses, so we got to have a plan, a great plan with Peyton.
And Peyton's new friend is Brady's old buddy.
We knew this day would come at some point. He's having a great year.
That's coming up right now on Patriots This Week.
When the yellow flag disappeared, there's a lot of people in this region that saw red. Well, that flag didn't disappear. He actually picked the darn thing up. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Patriots This Week. The Patriots win 7 games this year, but in defeat, they may have learned more about this football team than ever before. Joining me each and every week as usual, former tight end Jermaine Wiggins. What's up, Wiggy?
What up, Zoe?
Former linebacker Matt Chatham. How we doing, Matt?
So well.
Even in defeat, this wasn't Cincinnati. This wasn't the New York Jets for me. I think that there are a lot of good things that came out of that game, and I think this offense is starting to find an identity. Brady had all of his weapons. Wiggy, first time you've seen Gronkowski, Amendola, Shane Vereen all on the field at the same time. And then, hey, there's that guy Kembrell Tompkins, too. What'd you think of the offense?
I thought the offense looked good. I mean, if you look at their drives, basically they were 8 plays, 9 plays, 14 plays. And granted, they weren't able to finish some of those drives, but they were able to control the football. They were able to run the football. They were able to throw the football. So when you look at this Patriots offense as a whole against a pretty good defense that we've talked about, they were able to move that football up and down the field.
Piggying on Wiggy's point, I just like the idea that they're now diverse. I think the idea that they sustained those drives, they did all the things that look good. So there's sort of 2 baskets. In that one basket, I could say, these guys can move a ball kind of like what we remember last year. The only thing is they didn't finish a few drives that they should have. But the thing that makes you feel good about those, at least going forward, is that they were all self-inflicted wounds. The takeaway was this can be very explosive, especially against a very good group.
What makes them different? Is it having the tight end and the slot guy healthy, or is it having Shane Vereen that third down option, Wiggy?
When you add a guy like Vereen in there, it just adds another element, a guy that can get out of the backfield and catch passes. It's a guy that you can throw the screen to. We saw them throw a couple screens to Vereen. So that element definitely helps you. You add Gronkowski, you add a healthy Amendola. You just look at this offense and you start to have pieces at every position that you could take advantage of, and you could start doing some things that maybe you weren't able to do with certain guys, and then you're able to run the football.
The teams that go out of the way to include all the position groups generally are the best, because think of who's covering them. That's what it boils down to. If it just becomes a wide receiver game, it's just you versus the DBs. If you make the linebackers cover, if you make the defensive ends get involved, then it becomes a much difficult out.
There was a ball placed on the ground by number 22, Stephen Ridley. How do you deal with him, though, if you're Josh McDaniels, more importantly, Bill Belichick?
On the Ridley question, I think Ridley is still the guy. And I look at him now, it's more of a perception reality thing. The guy has put the ball on the ground 3 times this year, 2 as a rusher, 1 as a pass guy. That was the Polamalu play. If you look around the NFL, this number of 3 turnovers at the running back position is pretty normal. 7 or 8 top guys in that group. So it's not like we're dealing with a guy who has an unusual solo problem. So this number of 3 is not, to me, some indication of outside-the-box fumbling issue. And in a game where you're going in to play a team like Denver, this is still one of your best players. Now, in the event that the guy is just not taking the coaching and he's being wild with it, I find enough examples on tape that he's learning. When he makes the mistake, he corrects him. You don't want him. It doesn't make it okay, but let's not overreact.
I think Aqib Talib has swag. You've got to have swag to play that position. That means confidence. That means an air of cockiness. I think Aqib got a little caught up in Steve Smith in the moment. That's a different defense when he's out there. Even though he wasn't 100%, because the hip occurred later in the game.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to keep an eye on. We noticed that he was back off the field late in the game. And
pulled up. Yeah, he winced.
Beyond just the outside stuff, the peripheral, his attitude, all that kind of stuff. He still got beat a lot this game. I still think it all boils down to football. It's L's, X's, and O's. He gave up a good amount of catches, both to a small, fast guy, and then Brandon fell when they switched him over. So I think, you shouldn't judge him differently than you judge all players. It was his first week back. He'll work his way back in. I think he can be a really good player for him again.
Cam Newton, that scramble, that 24-yard pickup where I think ESPN's looking at it, and they clocked him at like 74.8 yards.
They let him break containment. They weren't disciplined enough, and Chandler Jones kind of takes an inside rush on this guy. You know what he can do. If you give him an inch, he'll take a mile. He's that type of athlete. But if you go back and you look at the game and watch him as a quarterback, He played well, but at times he was missing a lot of throws. He was inaccurate at times, but we know he can run the football on third down. It's a I had the opportunity to see Michael Vick play up close and personal, and if you give those type of quarterbacks that type of poor lane discipline, poor gap control, they're going to make big plays like that.
And there's this is actually, I wrote on this leading into the game as well, and it's so easy for me to sit here and say this, and I get that it's so much different being on the field and having to actually face this guy. But it's a very important rule that, that pass rushers are given, especially edge guys, when a guy's that athletic, say if you were Newton, to aim for his upfield shoulder. You'll see at times where he broke contain, where you see a guy start taking a beeline towards either a center line or inside. It gives you the ability to escape out the back of the pocket, do the little spin move. If you don't air upfield so that if you miss him, he goes back to all your buddies, you get in trouble.
All right, good stuff, guys. We saved the controversy. I'm not even going to call it a controversial call. I'm going to call it a bogus call. If it was a no call, we're talking about Gronkowski and Luke Kuechly. I think everybody knows which play we're talking about. We're talking about the call. Because you brought something with you. What do you got? You got a little rule book?
We got
hold that thing up for the camera.
Yeah, so, folks, this is the actual NFL rule book.
See, this is preparation right here. This is great stuff.
114 pages.
Why in the game-ending play should we pick the flag up now? We're against the Jets. Matt, we're starting with you on this.
Okay.
Because you're a little bit heated. You brought your rule book. Had some wiggy. Was it the worst call you've ever seen?
It's the worst call I've ever seen. It's a joke. It's not even kind of debatable. Luke Kuechly had to be just giggling himself all the way home that evening. I mean, bear hug the guy. But to me, there's the thread that runs through all this. It's much like the defenseless receiver stuff. It's the lawyers have introduced themselves to the NFL. So when you see the officials come out and say, well, you know, technically here on page, I mean, we're actually right. Every common sense human,
you know what?
Covering your own butt. Common sense in the stadium, 80,000 people knew this is crazy.
Well, we use another term for that here, if you haven't heard it, in essence, and it was used three times.
Three times.
In the like release by Cleet, by the way, who names her kid
but
Cleet.
But what's amazing to me, what's so asinine to me is that people will go out there and defend that, well, if it was the first quarter, if the second quarter, they would have picked it up. They would have let it stay. Right. That, to me, just right there, does not make any sense. If it's the second or third quarter and it doesn't mean you're leaving it,
yeah.
And now when the game means something, you're picking up.
See,
to me, that's the biggest, bogus part of this thing.
Here's the funny part for me. You know, played the league 10 years as a quarterback. Granted, it was backup, but we were always taught, start with Parcells, Belichick, Pete Carroll, keep going on and on, Jimmy Johnson. When you throw the ball away, and you want it to be, quote-unquote, uncatchable. Well, we'll talk about catchability.
Right.
Put it in the third row, son.
Right.
Yeah, put it in the third row. To me, it was always taught for 10 years that the ball that's uncatchable, high into the outside.
Airmailed
over a guy's head. I have never seen a ruling on a football field where a ball that's thrown short or in an area, because you look at the trajectory of that ball. If Gronkowski immediately stops and Kuechly doesn't engage him and push him back, that ball's landing in his
feet. But you know what they said, though?
His catch radius is pretty good.
This is the officials and what they said. Throw the catchability out of the window, because they're not saying whether or not it was catchable or uncatchable. They're saying that basically the reason why they picked the flag up, because when the guy intercepted the ball, that's
simultaneous.
Yeah, that's when it's like the ball being tipped at the line
of
scrimmage.
It's not close, because the still frame shows that the gentleman that intercepted the ball is on the other side of Gronkowski while he's engaged.
Here's the important part, too. I think you know it's BS. We can walk in circles here all day long. Fans know it's BS. The biggest issue to come away from this is sort of this trust issue with the league.
Yeah.
When we just came out of this thing with the helmet, the head issue thing, and they have to say, hey, plausible deniability, we don't have to touch that. This is another situation where they had an opportunity to say, you know what, guys, this is a common sense league. It's football. We know it was bad.
When we come up next, we're going to talk about another call in a big game that actually may affect seedings when this season comes down to the end. That more with Patriots This Week continues.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam, celebrating 75 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Bose, the official sound of the New England Patriots. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
This week's Putnam Player Spotlight is on Danny Amendola. The 5'11", 195-pound wideout is celebrating his 28th birthday this month. Against the Carolina Panthers, the Texas Tech product caught 6 passes for 45 yards. He also returned his first punt of the season. Amendola has the unique distinction of catching a pass in every game he's played in the NFL. This week's Player Spotlight is brought to you by Putnam Investments, pursuing performance excellence for 75 years.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week here inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. And let's go back, guys, to Sunday. San Francisco at the Saints. There was a key play at the end of that game where Drew Brees got hit. Did they get the ruling right where Brees' head was hit, flag was thrown, there was a fumble, San Francisco recovered, probably would have won that game. That hit probably decided that game. Was the call correct?
Oh, absolutely. No, of course not. Again, here, it's shades of gray. It's correct to their interpretation of the rule, but the rule was written basically so they can't be wrong, which means that in the event that it doesn't even have to be the first thing contacted, it wasn't. It was contacted here. You could make the argument that slid up, but the physics will tell you that it was struck. The head came forward. If the head had been struck, the head would have gone back as well. So physics tell you that it wasn't that was hit. It was slid up and later. So if the issue now is you can't strike anything that inevitably ends up there, I mean, where can you hit?
It's the follow-through, right?
It's silly, but look at how Ahmad Brooks did. Put yourself in that guy's shoes. He avoids his head. I mean, literally puts his body outside and goes to the side and then goes low, and that's still not good.
But ultimately, it was a clothesline.
Well, yeah, but at least if you're asking him to take his head away,
if that's Jeff Toole, does that get called? If that's Buffalo, and that's Jeff Toole.
It probably doesn't. But
see, that's part of it. If this is Tom Brady, would you want the rule called?
Well, yeah, you'd want. But see, I want the rule right, okay? And the only way, in my opinion, that you can get those calls right is they should implement a referee up in the booth that can now slow it down and look at it and say, okay, because there's only a few of those hits in a game where they're just so bang, bang. He can slow it down and then call down to the referee and say, hey, listen, it was a legal hit. There's no need to throw the flag.
The other quarterback that played against Drew Brees, Colin Kaepernick. What's going on with Kaepernick? Is he not good? Is he not as good as everybody billed him out to be? Or have teams caught up to him defensively?
Now, once they game plan and they figure out who you are, you make him a passer. And guess what? He's really not that accurate. He does have a big arm, but he tries to throw the ball through every receiver. If a receiver could be 5 yards away from him, he's still trying to throw a fastball. He doesn't have that touch, and I think teams now realize that, and they say, we're going to make you a passer.
Trent Dilfer said this last week, Matt. He said, take away his first read, the kid's cooked.
A lot of it's predicated on you biting badly on a play-action fake and then reducing the read to sometimes not even half the field, a quarter of the field. It's basically a two-receiver read. When you simplify that, when you know when it is or isn't read option, and when the read option isn't hurting you, you have to become a pocket quarterback. I think the people that were football outsiders overreacted, I think, a lot to the read option stuff. And now it settles back down, and it's still a valuable weapon. It still makes your preparation tough. I still think he'll be a good player.
Two guys are playing this game. They can't run worth a lick because coming up next, it's Manning versus Brady. Denver Broncos are coming to town, and there's not one person who wishes any one of those two guys run the football. That more next when Patriots This Week continues. All right, hey, Zoe's here. And you think, okay, it's Denver Week. I'm going to talk about Welker, Decker, Demaryius Thomas. No, all you fantasy studs out there, if you had this guy, Julius Thomas, and let's go to the tape, show you why he's so good. Freeze it right there. Here's Julius Thomas right here. You got nickel coverage right across the board for Baltimore. So what's Peyton Manning going to do? Great fake. Go ahead and roll the tape. Watch this area of the field right here. That's where Julius Thomas, early in the year, made a ton of heyday. Watch this shot from the back end line. Freeze it right there. Okay, this is a pretty good darn defense in the Dallas Cowboys, right? And this is the one thing I look at with Rob Gronkowski. Here's Thomas. They flex him out. I want you to watch this guy come down and watch this guy. Watch this free release down this lane. Go ahead and roll the tape for Julius Thomas. How do you let a guy like this, boom, great move, go down? That's an easy throw for Peyton Manning. Tom Brady makes a heyday out of this too. So let's advance it a little bit. Freeze it right there, okay? San Diego, it's a team that knows them. Here we go. Problem is you got Demaryius Thomas. Here's Welker on a move. We got Eric Decker. We got a nice play fake, no Sean Marino. Problem is you forget about this guy. Go ahead and roll the tape. Julius Thomas out in the flat. Peyton Manning will carve you up. If you cover his guys, he'll get the ball to the guys that open. That's your Zoe Show, and there's Julius Thomas.
The Zoe Show is brought to you by Pepsi, the official soft drink of the New England Patriots.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week here inside the Bob's Discount Furniture Studios. The Denver Broncos come to town at 9-1, and their quarterback, Peyton Manning, is probably having one of the best statistical seasons. Wiggy, you watch this guy play. He's got great weapons. You got Decker. You got Demaryius Thomas. Talked about Julius Thomas. And obviously, a little guy that wears number 83. Is 83 going to play in this game, and how effective is he going to be?
Yeah, I think there's no doubt in my mind that Welker plays in this game. If I'm Welker, I'm playing. Yeah, I'm playing in this game. You want to come back. You know, I've been a guy who bounced around, but as a player that left one team and went to another team and you had so much success, you kind of want to stick it to that team. So I think Welker comes back, and I think when you look at how they game plan, I think the Denver Broncos say, hey, Wes, we're going to get you involved in this game. We're going to try to get you some catches. We're going to try to get you a touchdown. Hopefully we can really stick it to them. But, yeah, I definitely see Welker being involved a lot in this game.
I think the bigger issue that they have that they present for the Patriots is they're so diverse. This is a lot like we talked about last year, a lot like this Patriots team can be later. But the two Thomases and Decker, there's not a guy you can take away. And when they have a run game, they're that much more dangerous. So it sounds sort of counterintuitive, but I would focus first on taking away the run game and then just worrying about winning the red zone. You're not going to be able to stop the track.
This isn't the same Denver Bronco offense that was there the first 4 weeks. How do you defend them if you're New England?
You cannot get into a game plan where you're trying to figure out how to stop the Broncos offense. That in and of itself is a wrong goal. What you need to try to do is win in the red zone. You want to make them compete, make them work to get there, and once you do get there, then you need to start working on tendencies. Where do they go with the ball? Is it Demaryius Thomas more in this range? Do they lean more on the tight end here? Where do the tendencies start to show up, and how can we lock it down there?
You know, we go back to that Miami game, Wiggy, where the Miami offensive line, going into that game, I think Tannehill was sacked 26 times. The Denver offensive line, you lose Copen to start the year. Clady goes down. Now all of a sudden, can Chris Jones, Joe Villano, and Matt Patricia and company, can they lick their chops a little bit looking at this offensive line and knowing that you got kind of a statue at quarterback with a little bit of a sore leg?
I don't know. It's going to be tough because you look at what Denver was able to do.
They're off pushing the middle.
Look at that offensive line and what they were able to do against Kansas City, who's arguably got the best defensive line. We're talking about getting after the quarterback, and they were able to hold up.
Zero sacks.
Yeah, they were able to hold up. I think when you talk about the defensive line, it's going to be big. And Matt Britt talks a great point. It's hard to slow down this offense, and the biggest thing is you have to get pressure with your front four when you're playing against guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady because they're so good. If you start blitzing and you start leaving a short amount of guys in the back end, they'll kill you. So you want to try to keep as many guys back as you can and be able to get pressure with as little amount of guys
you possibly can. If you could drop nine, yeah, that would be good.
And drop nine and get to Manning.
With two.
That's ultimately what you want.
That sounds great.
That sounds great.
I think they implement that new game plan that we saw the other night because they had a new rule where you could take linebackers and just tackle people downfield away from uncatchable football. So if I'm Matt Patricia, I put spikes at corner. I take Hightower. I put him at the rush end.
Tackle the offensive guard and the offensive tackle and send somebody free.
Beat him. All right, get your picks ready, guys. Because coming up next, predictions and game changers when Patriots This Week continues.
Patriots This Week is brought to you by Putnam, celebrating 75 years of service to financial advisors, their clients, and institutions worldwide. Bose, the official sound of the New England Patriots. And by Ace Ticket, the official fan travel partner of the Patriots. For information, call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com.
Time now for the Week 12 Fantasy Lowdown. I'm Brian Lowe. After a midseason dip, DeMarco Murray is set to get back on track against the Giants following Dallas' bye week. On the ground and in the air, he'll be the Cowboys' top offensive threat. Running back Chris Ivory is coming off consecutive huge games, but like the Jets in general, he rarely strings them together. Ivory will struggle and won't score against the Ravens. And a worthwhile sleeper, Rod Streeter, the Raiders' receiver, against the Titans. He's got two TDs on the year.
The Fantasy Lowdown is brought to you by Verizon. Stay connected to your Patriots at home and on the go with Fios Quantum Internet and NFL Mobile from Verizon. That's powerful.
Welcome back to Patriots This Week. Time for the predictions and get your money out, gamblers. Let's start with Matt Chatham.
Homer. I'm going to go Patriots 27-24. I think it's going to be a close game. And my impact player is going to actually be Stephen Ridley. I like the idea of the Patriots trying to control the tempo of this game, keep Peyton off the field.
Pop that, Wiggy.
Yeah, I'm a homer, too. It's simple. I'm going to go 27-21 Patriots, and my impact player is an offensive guy, wears number 87. I'm hoping to see a lot of Gronk spikes.
I can't pick this league to save my own tail, so here's what I'm going to do. The team that scores more than 36 points is going to win this football game. Take that one to the bank. But my game changer, I don't think people that are inside this building don't understand that 83 left this team. Somebody else is here. Danny Amendola is going to be your impact player. Hmm. He's going to have more than 9 catches. And Brady and this team is going to try and get him that football in a big game. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Patriots This Week. For Matt Chatham, for Jermaine Wiggins, I'm Scott Zolak. Hey, thanks for watching. See you next time on Patriots This Week.